Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Liam Tufts. In this episode, Andrew engages in a provocative discussion about controversial topics, including societal perceptions of gender and the implications of grooming gangs. The conversation touches on various sensitive issues, challenging conventional views and sparking intense debate. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
Shakespeare, oh, he's racist. Churchill, racist. We're in trouble. And the grooming gangs is just the tip of the iceberg. A lot of the left were pushing for adult-child relations. There would be countless Labour officials who are implicated in the grooming gangs. Very intelligent people will believe that women, literally women, have got penises.
You witnessed a man suck another man's dick in a street one day.
It was quite harrowing. I actually started crying afterwards.
Fucking wow. Let's talk about tits for a minute.
Allowing a man to fight in the women's Olympics, beating up all the women and everybody just applauding what a brave woman this man was. I mean, it's fucking mental. Muslim students praying. They got to pray during 9 to 5 at school, do they? They can pray at home. It's not a little minority. It's 2 billion people across 50-odd countries, tyrannical regimes, where people are thrown off of buildings, people do have their arms cut off. A lot of us will be either leaving the country or preparing for civil war.
Tommy Robinson, what are your thoughts on him? And what were they before you met him?
I am staggered by the low sentences that these guys get. People are getting 31 months for a tweet. Hugh Edwards didn't even get to see the inside of a prison.
I wouldn't be able to resist hurting him.
I use their products every single day, and now I finally get to work with them. I use their products for anti-inflammatory, reduced anxiety, better sleep, and mental clarity. Go and have a look at their website, see if there's anything in there for you. I hope you enjoy this week's episode, and good health.
Andrew.
Hello.
How the devil are you, sir?
Really good. We're finally meeting.
At long last. And the thing is, I am sport for choice with you. You have done such great work. You're a multilingual documentary maker, journalist, controversial YouTube host with your own successful podcast, and you've done some great things in your life, some things that are going to make people's ears prick up, but we're not going to come to that yet. I just want to get a feel for where you are with the country at the moment, because a lot of people are concerned. I heard you say that you think the UK's got maybe 7 years left before it's gone. What did you mean by that?
Well, thank you for the kind words, firstly. Lovely, and it's lovely to be here. And what I meant, I'll now launch into the pessimistic side.
We'll arc it.
Okay, everything's good, everything's fine, it's lovely and sunny outside. However, in a number of years, a very short number of years, we've got, okay, what, 3 or 4 years till the next election? Four years. And another, what is it, 4 or 5 till after that. Right, my issue here, I guess I am going into it quite quickly, is multiculturalism, particularly regarding Islam. Doesn't mean that the average Muslim person, that there's any problem with them or they've got any kind of issue against the UK. But as an ideology, as a force, it has precedent in other countries of becoming larger and larger and then taking over. We've seen that happen. The best way to learn about who we are today is to look at our past. And, you know, it's so cyclical, history. So we can see in Iran, we can see in Lebanon, Afghanistan. These are all countries that, if you see the photos of the 1960s, there was like women at the beach, like topless, like walking around like today. Unimaginable. Somehow everyone's forgotten that. I can't fathom it. It should be at the front of our brains at all times. Remember how Afghanistan and Iran were in the 1960s. They had their problems, of course. People would be going, hang on, you don't want to, you know, they had their issues. But Islam got in, political Islamism. It was helped by the left. The left thought, oh, look at this minority. We're going to overturn the Shah or whoever else, which, you know, that's a reasonable point as well. But they got the Islamists into power. And the next minute, all the leftists were killed. They killed the leftists the next day. So leftists, it's like the scorpion and the frog. You know, the scorpion and frog? The scorpion says, can you take me across the river? Mm. And the frog goes, but you're going to sting me. And he goes, no, I won't. Because then I'll drown as well. So the frog's like, well, that seems pretty reasonable. So he goes, all right, hop on, I'll take you across the river. Going across the river, scorpion stings the frog. And they're both drowning. And the frog goes, why'd you do that? And the scorpion goes, because I'm a scorpion. Mm. So, you know, as much as we want to believe everybody is on the same page as us, unfortunately, the leftists have shown they got Islam into power, like the frog helped the scorpion, and the scorpion stung it, which is Islam stung the leftists, killed them all the next day. 40, 50 years later, we're sitting here with another bunch of leftists. Mm. They're humans, just like the humans in Iran, just like the humans in Afghanistan. They have the same brains. They do the same things. They're trying to get Muslims now, or Islamism, into power. They're trying to help them to do that. And they will be killed right after. You and me, we better not be anywhere near this country when that happens. So I don't think in 3 years there's going to be a large enough population of Muslims in the country. I'm not sure about 7 or 8 years. That might be our last sort of chance. But, you know, the next election, 13, 14 years down the line, it's hard to predict the future. Mm. But that is the time where I would say a lot of us will be either leaving the country or preparing for civil war.
Yeah, it's a very frightening future, what may lay ahead. And if you look at the trajectory, it's kind of irrefutable that that is where we're heading. Do you think Keir Starmer has heard the story about the scorpion and the frog? And what are your views on him as a person?
He's just, you know, I almost don't want to have a go at him because everybody on both sides is, and it's just, it's almost too easy to do. The thing with him, I think what spoke to his character more than anything, there was this Supreme Court decision about trans recently. And they sort of came to this idea, this crazy idea that actually, you know, men are men and women are women, which we knew all along, of course. Keir, over the years, has said things like, well, not only women have cervixes and not only men have penises. These are things that although many of our colleagues and friends might have said somehow over the last 5 years, you know, oh, a woman can have a penis, we know to be absolutely bonkers. I cannot think of a more insane thing to say. It's almost as if they're winding us up. Mm. They're going like, what's the maddest thing we can annoy people with? Let's say women have penises. It's ridiculous. And for somebody who's the leader of the country to go along with that, you want them to be a bit more mature. But what we found with the Supreme Court decision was Keir finally felt emboldened enough to come out and actually side with reality. He finally said, well, of course, men are men and women, or whatever he exactly said.
His arm was forced.
His arm was forced. But also how pathetic, I think, that you have to wait for the court of law to tell you that. Mm. And what that implies to me is if we ever were in some kind of regime, some sort of authoritarian regime where the laws were, you know, Orwell, famously, it was 2 + 2 = 5. You had to believe 2 + 2 = 5 to be part of the party. You made yourself believe that. It takes a special kind of authoritarian to have that kind of mindset. And I think Keir has shown he has it. He can believe women have penises. That's the same as 2 + 2 = 5. Until the law changes. And then the law changes, and now he's on side with whatever the law says. So what if you live in a country where the law says you throw gay people off of buildings? What if you live in a country that has Sharia law? Well, Keir goes, well, let me consult the law book. And that's it. So I think he's a cowardly man. He's a vacuous, empty, just soulless entities, the kind of person we would have hated at school. You can imagine that, either a teacher or a student, just this kind of blank slate onto which the deep state or whatever it is can project their own laws and their own decisions and madness. And I think he's not necessarily evil. I think he's just nothing. And that's very upsetting, for considering he's our leader.
Having dissected the troubling nature of leadership and its implications on the societal beliefs, the conversation shifts to the controversial realm of trans ideology, exploring its classification as a cult and the nuances surrounding such labels.
That's interesting that speaking out against the trans ideology as what's got you in the biggest trouble and actually got you cancelled. Mm. And I've heard you refer to the trans ideology as a cult, and there wouldn't be many people more qualified to grade it as a cult than you because of your previous work with your exorcism work. You consider Islam a cult. You've also took a deep dive into Scientology. Link all them up for me, how they qualify as a cult and what is a cult on the whole.
What people like to hear is like a binary response, ironically the opposite of trans. So binary being yes or no. So we actually are on the binary side with regards to trans, right? He's a man or a woman, whereas they say, no, everything's a spectrum. That's bollocks, okay? However, there are definitely topics that don't have a yes or no. And I think cults is one of them. So is that a cult? Is it not a cult? Is it a religion? Is it a belief system? What is it? There was a great book I read by a writer called Amanda Montell, who's a linguist, and it's called Cultish. And I really liked that ish in describing what a cult is. They tend to have, for example, a charismatic leader. Well, Islam doesn't really have that. Scientology does. So Scientology maybe is more of a cult in some respects. Is Scientology more dangerous than Islam? I don't think so, because 4 or 5 people have died in Scientology, horrifically, in very horrible circumstances. but we're talking about millions and millions in Islam for speaking against the religion, for being gay, you get thrown off of buildings. That kind of stuff isn't even close to happening in Scientology. That's not to say it's not very dangerous. So you have a charismatic leader. You have a way of, you separate people in the clan to those outside. So Scientology is not really allowed to speak to their family outside. They would dispute this, by the way. They would say that's not true. You are told there's only one right way. This is the way you have to be. Okay, to trans, we don't have one leader at the top. But you could argue, okay, but a lot of the celebrities, the celebrity class, they are leaders who all together create this kind of cult. They lead this fashion. Those who join it are encouraged to separate themselves from their families. They constantly do. They use something called a thought-terminating cliche, is what we call it. So a Scientologist will be taught that if somebody is saying something to them that doesn't sound right or doesn't seem to agree with their scripture, you call them a suppressive person, and that means you don't have to ever listen to anything they say.
That's right.
So trans, it would be tough. So if you're trying to have a conversation, often with a teenager, and you're saying like, look, this isn't right, blah, 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 let me explain to you from a liberal perspective why this is a deeply illiberal idea, the idea that men should be going into women's toilets and women's spaces. And they can't hear the logic because all they're hearing, all they're thinking is TERF, 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 suppressive person.
I've never heard TERF.
Trans exclusionary radical feminist, TERF.
Right. So that's their go-to to shut you down.
The queen of the TERFs would be J.K. Rowling. That's what they would call you. They would call me. We are TERFs. And that is their go-to expression. Oh, you're just an effing TERF.
So that basically spares them the laborious task of explaining in detail as to why women can have a penis.
Yeah, they don't have to anymore because it's just like, you know, it doesn't matter how mad the idea is. There's another great book called The Intelligence Trap by David Robson. And it's about how even really smart people, particularly very smart people, can be led to believe crazy things. And it's often because they're so smart or so intelligent that they're better able to convince themselves of mad things. And the key example, a perfect example, is Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote Sherlock Holmes. So he's obviously a genius. He's written Sherlock Holmes. He's the master of deduction. He's this clever guy. And he believed in fairies, because some girls had done a prank and they put up like this picture in the 1930s or whatever it was of two fairies, and he started to believe in them. And they had put the pictures of fairies up with a drawing pin, and the pin he thought was a belly button. So he starts theorizing about how, wow, fairies can give birth because they've got belly buttons. That means fairies give birth. He's saying all this stuff. This guy's like a genius of his time.
Is he being serious?
100% serious. And he fell out with the magician Houdini. They were good mates, and Houdini was like an atheist, very secular, and they fell out about differing on those kinds of topics. But the point is, really smart people can lead themselves astray and convince themselves of completely insane things. So Scientology, I mean, most Scientologists don't actually know what the scriptures say, but they believe that evil Lord Xenu on another planet was suffering with overpopulation on his planet. So he sent billions of people to Earth for some reason and threw them all into volcanoes, and out of the volcanoes their souls came up, and then he put all of their souls into a cinema and showed them movies about psychiatry and Christianity and Judaism to force them to believe this stuff because he was evil, and those souls have now entered human bodies. I mean, it's fucking mental what they believe, but very intelligent people believe that in Scientology. The trans thing, very intelligent people will believe that women, literally women, have got penises. That's mental.
Yeah, that is mental. Just one more thing on Scientology, because anyone that doesn't know sort of where I'm actually based, but I grew up in an area very close to St. Hill, which is Scientology's headquarters. So we have John Travolta flying in relatively regular, Tom Cruise, some of his close relatives work nearby me. So I've always, and I've had friends that have turned to Scientology as well, and they changed in pretty quick succession in their mentality and how they would actually perceive their fellow man. All of a sudden they were so elevated and superior and kind of unrecognizable to the person I knew them before. And so that change in personality that they must have, well, I think they call it drilling, didn't they, where they just drill you with kind of brainwashing literature and seminars. But it's the thing you said about four or five deaths. Is that four or five murders for speaking against the church?
No, they don't tend to murder people. There are rumours about that they've done that to people's pets, that they've poisoned their pets. Things have happened. The biggest example was Lisa McPherson, who she seemed to be struggling with her mental health. I mean, she was sort of big into Scientology and big part of the whole thing. And we don't know exactly what was happening to her, but there's this belief in Scientology that comes from the top that you when people are having a mental breakdown or a mental episode, you lock them in a room with no food and water, and somebody has to sit outside and guard it for like a few days.
Having delved into the unsettling practices surrounding mental health within Scientology, the conversation shifts to the complexities of public perception and media portrayal of controversial figures. As the discussion unfolds around Tommy Robinson.
I mean, you're a mate of his, but I didn't know him. So how am I going to get any other side about Tommy than what the media puts out there? Mm. And it's not just the left, it's the right, it's the Daily Mail, all of them. Racist Tommy Robinson, blah, 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 blah. When I started Heretics, my guest booker was going, oh, should we get Tommy on? And I went, oh, because I just dipping my foot into this world. And I went, oh, I don't know. And he goes, have a look. Have a look at, you know, properly research him and all that. And I thought, I always think of myself, I'm always going to give everyone a chance. That's how I feel about Enya Luko, and I still like her, even though we disagree about everything. And it's how I feel about, well, potentially talking to Tommy at this point. I'm going, okay, well, let's have a look. And I'm looking, can I find something racist that Tommy Robinson said? I'm asking ChatGPT. I'm looking everywhere. And there's loads of websites, Hope Not Hate, and all of them. They're going, Tommy Robinson is a racist, blah, blah, blah. He's one of those sneaky racists who never says racist things. I'm like, what? You know, there's literally a line on Hope Not Hate. It's something like that. It is. I haven't got it right, but it's something like that. He's one of those.
We know he's thinking racist thoughts.
Yeah, exactly.
Fact.
Exactly. Man, it's just such bollocks. And I guess you get to a point when you've learned that the media's lied enough times about so much. And I'm as concerned as anyone about Islam. And I'm looking at what he's saying. And I honestly couldn't take issue with any of it. And I saw his speech at the Oxford Union. He was so good.
Incredible, wasn't it?
Smart, switched on, smart guy. And he's getting up in front of these guys. Now, I went to posh school and I'd be terrified to stand up at the Oxford Union and speak to these guys. Mm. Tommy's from a totally different background and was still able to stand up in front of these Oxford, you know, some of them I'm sure are lovely guys and some of them are pretentious idiots who are, you know, made up their mind about him before he started speaking. But he was really good. Mm. He was really good. And I did start thinking about how much we've changed. I mean, do you know about the Overton window?
Mm-hmm.
Political, acceptable.
Well, he has shifted it so far that now people like Farage can talk about what Tommy was talking about 10 years ago. He's opened the doors for all of these mainstream politicians to start speaking some truth for starters.
But it's almost like we've got two Overton windows. And it's like we've got that for the politicians, as you say. At least some of the fringe politicians can start talking about it. But in the media, it's gone the other way almost, I find. Like, 13 years ago, there was a documentary. Do you remember Stacey Dooley in Luton?
Yeah.
My hometown or something. Mm. She's basically walking around with a camera, just going, this is mental. Mm. Like, she's walking around. This is Stacey Dooley of, like, Dancing on Ice or whatever she does. Lovely, sweet person, seems really nice. And she's walking around going, oh, my God. That's like 13, 15 years ago. Mm. BBC, everyone's going, wow, oh, my God, we've got a problem. 15 years later, the problem is about 15 times bigger. And yet you would not get the BBC having a cuddly, friendly Stacey Dooley presenter and making a documentary like that. So they seem to have gone the other way, where you can't even talk about it. And yes, you're right, because of Tommy, some politicians can now start speaking about it. So it's like a complete divide in society.
I think the BBC are an absolute complicit disgrace. An absolute loathsome institution. And what did surprise me recently was Channel 4. Put out a documentary called Groomed. But what they've done is they've basically remade Tommy's documentaries, The Rape of Britain 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I believe 6 when it comes out, and they've just changed the name. But I mean, I'm grateful they're doing it because I want as many people speaking about it as possible. I mean, our job as adults is to make sure our children are safe and future children. So I'm very pleased they've done it, but also gobsmacked.
I'm shocked. I was completely shocked that Channel 4's done it because the last 15 years has shown that they are totally unwilling to do it.
Mm.
I guess it might be one of those where, you know, Muslim leaders can't really say very much about, they can't come back and say to Channel 4, how dare you? You've pointed out these horrible things, you know?
Yeah, how dare you report on facts?
What I'd like them to do, Channel 4 or the BBC, is to make something like that Stacey Doodley documentary today. Mm. Look how Luton's been taken over. Well, today, let's look at Birmingham, Leicester, Rotherham, 100 other cities. Because the grooming gangs are important. I don't want you to think I'm skipping over that. It's just you and I have talked about it a lot. And it's super, super important. But my only concern is that it's an extreme bit that might distract from the actual everyday eradication of Englishness, which is not, you know, what happened to those girls. It keeps me up at night. It does. What doesn't keep me up at night necessarily is like, hey, the high street is gone, right? Mm. But again, if I was to move to Pakistan or Spain, right? Spain, they hate us in Spain because we moved to Spain and every street is full of fish and chip shops and Irish pubs, right? We like it.
Yeah.
Tacky
bars full of fights.
Yeah. You and me and Tommy can go out and have a great time. Mm. The Spanish hate it because it's their homeland. And they go out, and the woke, the left in England, they sympathise with the Spanish. When I say to them, all the English going out to Benidorm, you know, having a party and making it all fish and chips and stuff, they're like, oh God, what you've done to Spanish culture.
Mm.
Fine, I get it. But what is happening to our high streets here, to our country? Just random high street. You know, I'm always travelling around for work. I'm sure you are as well. I stop at towns. I don't even know what they are, what town this is. And it is just, firstly, I don't see somebody who's not dressed in Muslim attire. And all the restaurants are some sort of foreign kind of thing. In many ways, it's an improvement because some of our food was not great.
Mm.
But it is a slow eradication of our culture. When this happened to any other culture, Native Americans, the Spanish, as I say, everybody's like, oh gosh, you know, this wasn't good for them. This isn't good for us. So I want to see Channel 4 or the BBC stand up and say, we're in trouble. And the grooming gangs is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
That's it.
You've interviewed a PDF file face to face. Now, that may not sound as outlandish to people because we don't know who we speak to, but you actually knew he was a PDF file. That was the purpose of the interview, weren't it?
It's been a few like that. I mean, the one that I had on the podcast, this was when it was called On the Edge with Andrew Gold.
Yeah, so I sort of want to know how it actually made you feel knowing that somebody opposite you is attracted to children and is prepared to or actually has slept with children. How did you not grab him by the windpipe?
Was this because I showed you this is the video when I'm in Germany. He's got like a blonde wig on.
Yes, you're in a field with him.
Yeah. He's, man, it was really hard. I mean, I got to Germany. Nobody knew who I was in terms of my career. I've been scrapping for years and years. And I sat there and I went, what can I do that no one else is going to do? Because that's the debt. I was on minimum wage. I could hardly pay my bills. And I'm going, what can I do? How can I make it as a journalist? And I was looking at all the different things going on in Germany. And one of them was state-sponsored therapy that helps PDF files to not offend. And in return, the clinic promises never to report these guys to police. They don't even get their names. So they couldn't even if they wanted to. The good side of that, these guys who would never go to therapy otherwise, they go into therapy. And even if the clinic is only successful in helping 10% of them, that's 10% of them who would have offended and who didn't. And that's 10. That's a lot of kids whose lives have been saved by this clinic. The bad side of it is these guys going into therapy and then doctors know about them and they're going out and abusing and they can't report them to police. So I see both sides of this. It's really complicated. And I think actually overall I'm in favour of the...
Navigating the complexities of therapy and its implications leads to a startling encounter. As the conversation shifts to a troubling babysitting scenario that raises even more questions about safety and responsibility.
She then goes for a swim so I can speak more openly with him. I go, mate, like, what are you doing with this girl here? Why is there a girl? He goes, oh, don't worry, I'm babysitting her. I go, no, you're not. He goes, yeah, babysitting. I go, you can't be babysitting girls with your condition or whatever it is, your illness, your... He goes, oh, it's awful. I would never do anything. And I go, well, you just took her through the changing rooms, didn't you? So already that's something. Does the mum know? He goes, yeah. We met. And the mum is this massive lefty who believes that PDF files are a minority who are not being heard. And that we need to help them. And I get the argument as well. If they've never offended or whatever, and I understand it must be, you know, I understand both all those things. But my God, what an idiot that mum And so I talked to him for a little bit and I thought, right, I don't know what to do. Do I tell the police? Do I talk to the, you know, I don't know what to do. And I haven't seen him offend anyone. I spoke to somebody from the clinic afterwards. When I came, I actually started crying afterwards. Mm. I was so stressed out. Oh, and I forgot to mention, she came back later, the little girl, and two other girls came. There were three girls he was babysitting at the pool.
What an infuriating situation to be in on so many different levels. I mean, that mum, I mean, she's in line for a slap with the king.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. You witnessed a man suck another man's dick in a street one day. What on earth were you doing there?
Well, this was gay pride. And, you know, my wife's friends or someone like that, they were going to the gay pride. You can't really avoid it, can you? It's all over the street. And I'm very pro-gay, you know, not so much that I engage in it, but enough to sort of...
Let's have a go.
Yeah, not again, mate. No, you know, good luck, be gay.
Lips
be
dry.
Do your thing, have your fun. I couldn't care less. And I encourage it. You know, if you're a gay fella and there's another gay fella, go have your fun behind closed doors. Do your thing.
I'm the same.
Yeah, absolutely, you know, whatever.
If you're not hurting no one, continue.
Or hurting each other, but in a nice way. I don't know. Maybe it must feel nice for them to do it.
That's,
you know?
That's their business.
Yeah, good luck to them. But good on them. I'm happy to come out and celebrate. I've never been to gay pride before. So, well, okay, I'll come along and all that. It is an issue today, and it's an issue that gay people face, that back in the day, they fought a very dignified fight for civil rights. And they were dignified, and they wore suits and things, and they said, we're going to prove to you. You know, I said before, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, you know? Mm. They knew, we're making a claim here. Not all men fancy women. They do not do that. And they did it, and it was all very dignified. And I just think, imagine going your whole life fighting for this right that you did not have and others did have. Mm. You finally get it, and then your name is besmirched by a bunch of randy activists who turn up basically naked in the street in front of children. The very thing that most gay people fought to push against, that stereotype of like, oh, gay guys, they're going to get your kids. Gay guys aren't going to do that, but there's a certain type of person who usually identifies as something called queer. Gay people I know are just absolutely gutted that this has started to happen in their name almost. And so, yeah, I turned up to, and I thought, okay, what's going on here? I looked to my side. There's just a fella giving another one fellatio.
What was the technique like?
Well, it was the first one I'd seen, so I guess it was the best one and the worst one I'd ever seen. But there's nothing like seeing it in person. Some people listening, they go to sex clubs or they go to these things and they're used to it. Mm. I'm used to interviewing strange people. For other people, it would be a mad, crazy, and for me, it's nothing. So for them, it would be nothing. For me, though, seeing it in the flesh, an actual, you know, I don't want to use certain words that will trigger YouTube, but enlarged appendage.
Engorged
appendage. Member. Right next to me, there's kids around. And there's like...
That's outrageous.
He's got it in his mouth. It was mental. And it was one of the things that started making me think, okay, this doesn't mean you go mental and start hating gay people. I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm. And I started to realise how gay people relate to these people. These are just, you know, fetishists. And... Mm. There's a space for fetishists, right? You want to do your fetish, do it behind closed doors. I don't care.
Yeah, in the street with children there, that's, again, it's always going to, any, you know, I swear like a sailor. I curb it when I'm doing a podcast for obvious reasons. People don't want to listen to me effing and jeffing for 2 hours at a time. But also, I curb my language at home when there's children about. And I have to fight it with everything I've got. So you've got to change. You've got to wear a different hat when you're around children. I mean, you've got two lads in the street sucking each other's dick when there's kids about. I mean, fucking wow. Let's talk about tits for a minute.
Go on.
Page three. So when you work for The Sun, you used to prepare the page three girls. For people watching and listening that perhaps don't remember page three models. Mm. So years ago, when it was far less woke, I'll probably get lambasted for that comment, we used to have a page three and a page seven of The Sun, for example, and women would pose topless for the randy builders to pass around the canteen in the morning. But then page seven, there was a topless man, if you remember, for the horny housewives.
Oh, I don't remember that.
There was a page three and a page seven. Page seven come afterwards, I think.
It's funny you remember that, Luke.
I'm all for equality, you see. So they got the balance out. But anyway, so what are you doing? You're fluffing up there. What are you doing?
I was the fluffer.
He was the fluffer.
Fucking hell. Yeah, It was a mad job, you know. And that was a weird time for me, I think, you know, psychologically as well. You know, I was 22 or something, finished uni, didn't know what I was doing. I'd had a bad breakup. I was like, well, and I found this job at The Sun.
Bet your friends were envious when you told them what you were doing.
It was such a boring job, considering what part of it. Because I did nights at The Sun. I found a job working nights at The Sun. It was really well paid. I was 21. It was shift work, but it added up to 40 grand a year, right? If you do 5 days a week. So it was a great job for a 21-year-old. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my luck. Most journalism jobs were like 18K. However, the catch was it was at night. So I'm working till 4 or 5 in the morning each night, which is a depressing environment to work in, I think. It's just your little table, putting up some articles online and blah, blah, blah. And I was responsible most nights for uploading the Page 3 girl to the iPad version where you could twist her around. She was three-dimensional. So that was what I was spending most of my evenings doing. And it's, you know, I was interviewed the other day by someone who was saying, like, oh, wasn't that, you know, you must have loved that. And I was like, I'm telling you, at 4 in the morning, you just want to go home. You know, I could look it up there. I don't need to do it in my workplace. I just wanted to go home. And often, more often than not, there were problems with it. It didn't load. So I was spending 5 a.m., 6 a.m., while all of my mates were out clubbing or doing whatever they were doing on a Friday night. I'm sat at Sun HQ, News UK offices in London, on the phone to India, trying tech support, going, this woman's boobs aren't loading on the iPad. Trying to get, and then the people would come in the morning, the next, all the big journalists and stuff. You're like, you're right, Andrew, you're still working on the tits and all that. I was like, yeah, yeah, I'm on the phone to India trying to get the tits working. They're like, well, you better hurry up, mate. It's ready to go out and all that. So anyway, I was responsible for the Sun's iPad tits.
You know, people watching this are going to be so disappointed by that response that I bet they thought, here we go.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.